If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Don't just fast forward right here. I know some people think that we always do a little infomercial.
Important information coming
TiVo,
now.
TiVo.
No, it's just not just important information. This is all free, good information that is coming out. You guys are about to hear an episode that we do with Dr. Brink. So I want to give you guys
Dr. Justin Brink.
That's right, Dr. Justin Brink. I want to give you guys some places.
My
that
other
you can,
favorite Justin.
Where you can find him on Instagram. You guys can find him at premier_spine_sport. He does a lot of cool educational posts on there. So if you can hop on there, help support him. And then if you ever have questions, you can also find him on the forum. He's on our private forum. He's on there a lot with the boys and I. You can also go to his website, which is premierspineandsport.com. And then also we have on the 13th, at 12 p.m. Pacific.
It should be in a couple days when we drop this, right? A couple days after.
Yeah, a day or two, December 13th, 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're going to have a live cast. We're going to do a Q&A regarding MAPS Prime, MAPS Yellow, which is coming out.
You'll hear us talk a little bit about it in the upcoming episode. You just go on our Facebook page, Mind Pump Show.
A regular Facebook page, yeah. Mind Pump Show.
Exactly. We'll also be, there should be an episode on YouTube up on our channel, MPTV, where Dr. Brink is giving Adam a full assessment.
He's making him squirm.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
It's great. So you're going to hear us talking to Dr. Brink right now. He is one of our, if not our favorite person when it comes to correctional exercise, when it comes to, you know, stretching techniques, when it comes to strengthening recruitment patterns, changing recruitment patterns. He's a chiropractor, by practice, but he's so much more. So you'll be hearing us talk to him.
He's also handsome.
In this episode. And, March 11th and 12th, I want to make sure I plug this. We're going to have an Eldoa seminar here at Mind Pump Media Studios in San Jose. So if you want to attend, you can ask, get more information at, you go eldoa@beachfitness.com, email them, you'll get more information there. Or you can even find us on Instagram and ask us at Mind Pump Radio on Instagram.
Dr. Brink will be there along with all of us. You'll see, get a chance to meet us if you guys
And you'll get coming. To see our beautiful studio.
Mind Pump Media. HQ, son.
Exactly. So without any further ado, here's Mind Pump interviewing Dr. Justin Brink.
Justin, you're in my seat.
You get all perched.
I know. Justin's just it's such a prettier
view. I make him uneasy.
Can we call him something else? Because this is confusing.
Okay.
J Master J over there sitting on the
Justin Part 2.
Recliner.
Part 2.
Dr. J.
We'll call you.
I like Dr. J.
I like JB. JB's kind of
JB?
Cool.
I like calling you Round
JB.
Glutes.
I like JB.
I'm getting the nickname. Gotcha.
Yeah, you're Round Glutes.
All right, were you ever? Glutes. Did anyone ever nickname you JB? I feel like JB. Okay, I just say JB is like a cool.
How's the mic for him? Is it too far away? Close enough?
I have to hear him talk. You don't get.
I've been.
Chance.
Everyone's talking way too much.
Welcome to Mind Pump.
Yeah, you got to jump in.
Where Mind Pump talks and never lets their guests talk.
We're here for an hour and never said a word.
Hurry up.
How funny is that? You know what? It would be really fun, actually, to invite a guest sometime that we don't really like.
And have him not talk.
Just be talking the whole time.
Yeah, like interrupt him. Every time he goes to talk, we just interrupt him. Like, oh, yeah, Sal, so what you were saying, right?
Good, cool story.
You mean like a normal day at Mind Pump? Yeah.
You mean like how I survive?
We're not that bad.
Now, jump in. Now.
Is that what it really feels? Does it feel like that when you're listening to Sal and I go back and forth? Does it feel like you're trying to like you're?
Does it feel like you're going back?
Oh, it definitely feels like it's always like it's like a
I missed it.
Double jump rope, double dutch. Yeah. There you go. Like you're trying to jump
one, in. In.
whack. Hit with a rope every time.
You're out.
Son of a bitch.
Every once in a while, me and Adam make eye contact with each other, and we're like
roller coaster.
We're like, let's give him a chance. What was it the other day when you were talking about something, and then we kept jumping in, and after the episode was over, you're like, okay, guys, I could have said that.
Yeah, listen. I don't need you. Yeah, no, I think it was. Yeah, we were with Ben, I think.
Oh yeah,
interviewing me. They were like so scared I couldn't answer the question, so they just like start talking in front of me.
Well, Ben
I was like, this is great.
Ben can be a little intimidating. He's one of those intellects that you can't even have like a surface conversation with him. Like if you start to say anything with him right away, it becomes like this in-depth like I have to break his stuff apart. Like, okay, what did he just say? He said this, yeah. And then I'm like on my phone.
Photoreceptors in my nose.
Yeah, I'm on my phone like Googling half of it. I'm like, wait, come on. Can we revisit what you just said like a minute ago? Because I did, and he says it so fluently. Like it's kind of like, I feel like what Sal would be like on LSD. That's what I feel like it would be like. Just this.
Or what level. I think I'd be like. I don't think I'd actually be like that.
Yeah. All so right. let's introduce our guest here. If we ever let him talk.
No.
Dr. Justino Brink.
That's right.
We finally have Dr. Brink in here with
JB,
us on
Justin,
the mic.
Justin Brink is
We've
in the
We've only mentioned him 1,000 times.
How did you guys... Now, you, Adam, you met him first. How did that happen?
So, I believe... I don't know if Justin can tell the story on the first time that he...
JB.
He reached out to me.
JB.
Yeah. The first time Dr. Brink...
It was on Tinder,
Dr.
right?
Dr. Brink.
Yes.
No, it was Tinder.
He swiped right.
he swiped right, and then it was just... history after that, right?
That's right.
No. Chemistry.
He reached out to me, and right away after he reached out to me, typically, especially if it's another some fitness professional at all, I'll always look at their page and just kind of like browse through to see, you know, if they know what the fuck they're talking about. And right away I was like, oh, okay, this dude's legit. Like, I really like his shit. And then we just started communicating back and forth. And I'm sure he probably got frustrated with me because it was probably really difficult to find. But that was, I'll tell you what though. He showed up to our seminar at Orange Theory, and I remember leading up to that. I mean, a bunch of times, like we tried to like coordinate. Oh, come in on Saturday. I'm holding this class. You know, hey, he kept telling me I could drop by. He invited my clients to come by for free and everything. And I was like, man, I really got to get over and see this guy. I love what he's doing. And we just kept missing each other. And then when he showed up to ours, I was like, okay, that's it. The fact that he went out of his way to make it to our seminar and stuff like that, I'm like, we have to make time. And then it literally, like, once we started talking, it was nonstop. But when was it when you, what led you to even connect to me?
It was on your Instagram page. And so I was, I don't know, just trolling through, and someone had mentioned your name because of working with Orange Theory. Mm. And so from Orange Theory, I was looking at it, and I'm like, I saw you doing like a squat. And with the squat, then I was like, then I just broke down something on the squat, and then you had answered back. And then at that point is when we just started having dialogues, you know, on there. Oh,
so basically, wow. You were looking at his Instagram. You're like, that,
yeah. Nice glutes.
That's, yeah, nice glutes.
That's
yeah.
Shitty. Let me give him some. Let me give him some tips.
That's right. It was like, look at your right
help
foot.
You out, buddy.
It turned out just a little bit.
I'm glad he looked at yours and not mine. If you looked at mine, he'd be like, this is hopeless. I'm not going to be in contact.
Next,
where do I begin?
So, you mind if I just call you Brink, because I don't want to confuse you and Justin? Do you, your method, the way you approach what you do, because you're a chiropractor, that's why we call you Dr. Brink, but your approach is very different from almost any chiropractor I've worked with, and I've worked with some very good ones who had some touches of what you do. Could you explain a little bit about what makes you different and why your approach is so different, and why when people come see you, they're like, okay, I expected a chiropractor appointment, I got so much more.
I think the biggest part for me was always with my injuries that I've had in the past, and how can I always make myself better after these injuries? So everyone's always getting injured to some capacity, and they go back and they go through the standardized, all right, here's this exercise, here's a piece of paper, here's six stretches, here's six exercises, go home and do them, and I'll see you in a month. It's like, well, what does that stuff do for you? And then, so for my own, I've torn both ACLs, I've had a back surgery, you know, I mean, I've done this stuff, and I still go out and I still want to move. So I think what makes me different is trying to watch how everyone moves in full capacity, not just if it's a knee problem. Oh, I'm going to focus at the knee, or is it a hip, or is it a neck? You know, making sure, okay, where's this issue actually coming from? Is it a foot? That's why, I mean, I've, you know, heard you guys talk about in the past, you know, with me, you know, taking everyone's shoes and socks off. I want to see what your toes do. You know, your toes are supposed to move. You know, your feet are supposed to move. But yet, we go to the gym and we exercise everything from the ankle up. Yeah. We never focus on the foot.
God bless you, because feet are disgusting.
Well, they are.
You know what I mean?
They are.
Yeah.
Well, that let me tell you, that was something that was unbelievably eye-opening for me when you broke me down like that. I mean, I had been struggling with these. And I know, I'm sure Justin and Sal can agree with me when it comes to this. There's nothing more frustrating when you're a fitness professional and you think you know the body really, really well, and then you hit a roadblock with your own body.
Yeah.
You know, that just irritates the shit out of me. And especially when I'm diving through, I'm searching, I'm reading, and I'm like, could it be this? And then I'm applying that in the gym, and I'm trying to like troubleshoot it. And then, you know, I think I get closer because something kind of alleviates it, but then it comes back, and then I'm like, fuck, what is this? And I remember when you broke me all the way down to my bare feet and started there. It was like, then it was just like, obvious why all these other things that I had been feeling in my body that I couldn't quite figure out where it was stemming from. It was so enlightening for me, and it was so refreshing because I absolutely hate chiropractors.
As you should.
And I believe I said that to you the very first time we got together. Yeah. I'm very upfront with thinking that.
He comes out with that.
I think
I hate chiropractors.
He walked through the door, good luck. Arms wide open.
Good luck, buddy.
And the reason why, just like Sal said, I have probably worked, I think 100 is probably a fair number I could say that I've worked with, either directly, like they were somebody that had done work on me, or they worked in one of the gyms that I was currently working at, or we had some sort of a cross promotion deal with them, or just in connection. I mean, we're in related fields, so you meet a lot of different chiropractors. It's a very popular thing, I feel like, over here in the Bay Area too. And I just felt like every time I would meet one, I was hoping I would get, you know, more information or learn something new about my body. And I felt like all the ones I ran into, they were just all into this, you know, this quick fix, like pop me into place, give me this instant relief, and then that was it. There was like no, like, let's talk about like how the fuck I got there, you know, and like how I keep myself from getting there again. It was like, pop you into place, come back and see me again.
Well, they do. That's why you got to come back in 3 days.
Right? Like, isn't that
the next 200 years.
Is it like, do they teach that in chiropractor school, or what? How does that fucking work?
I think the mentality of kids in school these days is going back 100 years from what they've just known, right? We'll come back in and we're going to adjust your spine because you're subluxated or whatever you want to call it. It's like, I can't stand that term. So it's like,
what is that? What did you say? Sub what?
You have a subluxation. You know, your vertebral body is moved to the left or to the right. I'm like, who cares? You know, because your muscles go with your spine goes with your muscles, but your brain coordinates everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for me, it's like, if we can get your body to control that movement, your spine's going to move no matter what. You know, so this is why I don't shoot x-rays. If I feel like it needed an x-ray, I'm going to refer you out. You know, if it's uneasy, I'm not going to treat you. You know, so let's get your body to actually do what it's supposed to do versus let me just rack and crack you. You know, and again, and that's our profession. And that's the bad thing, is it becomes a huge business model on their end.
Yeah.
You know, because it's here, sign this contract, do 3 times a week for, you know, the next year. And then after that, you should be better. Well, hell, I better be better.
Now, would you say that's the biggest problem with chiropractic today, is that they follow that model where people come in and then just crack and leave?
I think a lot of them, because they're not into what mainstream medicine, if you will, you know, and like myself, a lot of them will call me like a metapractor, you know, because I'm practicing more medicine, if you will. I mean, I'm not obviously prescribing medications or anything, but I'm more in line. I mean, I deal with orthos and I deal with neuros, you know, all the time. They're my friend. You know, PTs are my friend versus, oh, they're the enemy because they're not holistic in nature. It's like, well, what does holistic actually mean? You got to get your body to work. But that doesn't mean I have to come back and see you, you know, every third day because you need to, you know, adjust my body because I'm subluxated or I'm out or, you know, whatever it is. You know,
I always thought that was strange. I always thought that the approach was weird because I'd go see someone and they'd tell me I need to see them on a regular basis because I'm active. And I remember thinking that the opposite should be true, that I should need to get treated for pain or whatever less often because I'm active. Because then I would hear them say the same thing to someone who was inactive. They'd say, well, you need to come see me, you know, once a week because you don't move. And I remember thinking, well, fuck, I guess everybody needs to see you once a week forever.
That's right.
Like, how does that work? And I've had chiropractors give clients of mine, I think I've seen some chiropractors try to go the extra distance where they give people exercises to do. But being a trainer, I typically know movement better than they do. Yeah. So they'll tell my client to do an exercise. Like, no, that's not the right way to do it. You're the first one I've met where I would completely trust beyond even myself when it comes to movement. And why is that so rare?
Well, A, they don't teach that in school.
Okay.
Or the classes they do teach are very minimal at most. So it's going in and just bare bones. All right, here's an exercise for low back. Here's something for neck. Something for a shoulder. Now, I know that has started to evolve. You know, I mean, it's been 10 years since I've graduated. You know, so in the 10 years talking to my brother right now, you know, who is in school, it's like he's learning some more of this stuff, but by no means is it in-depth by any means.
So a lot of your education is outside of...
Oh, I would say probably 95% of it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Would you mind going into some of the stuff?
Well,
that's what
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask, which leads
the influencers.
Into this, is we talk a lot about on the show and what we share, and you know this because I know you listen to most episodes, those aha moments for us. can you pinpoint some of those in your whole career? Like, do you remember like oh my God?
So I think as an athlete growing up, I always had some degree of exercise that I knew, you know, whether it was, you know, I played collegiate water polo. So, you know, off season, in season, doing that type of stuff. Once I got into school and then I got out of school, it was then getting into my first one that I took was NASM. So I went and got certified through the CES and the PES.
Oh, good.
And that was where I went in and said, okay, this is different, you know, and then obviously I tore my ACL.
You did that when you were in college?
I did that once I graduated from Cairo School.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah. So you went Cairo School, then you went to, this is great because I think who you are as a person is coming out here, because a lot of people would graduate, you know, chiropractor school and look at a personal training cert and say, why do I need that? I'm a chiropractor.
No, I mean, again, for me, knowing that the adjustment just wasn't it, there was a lot more to just an adjustment versus, okay, how can I make myself stronger? And I really what, you know, stemmed that whole thing was when I tore my ACL. I'm like, holy crap, okay, I'm in the gym every day. I can dunk. I can lift. I'm strong. And I sat there and caught a pass and pivoted. My knee buckled in half. That's a problem. You know, why did that happen? Why do you see athletes do that, you know, over and over and over again? So that sort of started my quest on to, okay, there's got to be more than just me as a supposed doctor, if you will, you know, because that didn't fix anything.
What did you think about the CES? Because I actually have both of those, and I've talked a little bit about it on the show. What did you think about those when you went through that? Like, what did you like about CES and PES? What did you not like about it? I mean, what do you think about that as far as a certification?
CES for me at the time was amazing because they had at that time they had the best squat assessment there was. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it broke down the squat, and that's where I really learned that the squat.
Yeah.
PES for me was on the opposite end because I really wasn't doing a lot of performance stuff with any of my clients at the time. You know, so I sort of put that stuff on the back burner, but a lot of the corrective stuff I could utilize day one, you know, seeing my clients in, they've got a low back issue here that you can try a bridge, you can try a ball bridge, you can do, you know, a plank, you can do a side plank, you know, you can do all these different things that obviously they're teaching.
That one post I had done on Instagram that I know you had commented on where I had demonstrated a plank. In a posterior pelvic tilt. Yeah. And people were freaking out because it wasn't a neutral spine.
Well, not just normal people. What was great was academia, was the people that...
They were losing their shit because I was demonstrating a plank in posterior pelvic tilt because I'm trying to show how you can activate more abs and how a lot of people are anterior tilt, and it's the opposite of it.
What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Loved it. I loved it. You know, the fact that we have to own control through every, you know, piece of movement, I was okay with that.
Oh, let's say that. Let's just stop for a second. Own control through every part of movement. This is very, number one, it sounds like a duh, but the reality is academia for a long time has been teaching train.
It's
in,
a revolutionary idea.
It is, and it shouldn't be, right? It's all about train in neutral spine, train in perfect anatomical position all the time. You do a row, get in perfect position, do your row, lock your shoulder blades back, keep them there. You're doing a press, stay in this locked position. You're doing a plank, stay in this neutral position. Why is that the wrong approach?
Well, I don't know if it's a wrong approach. I think it's trying to keep people in the ability to not create pain or not create a low back issue. Mm. But the problem I have with that is when you talk about neutral spine, that means you're not moving. You know, you're planking, you're not moving. You're doing a row, your spine doesn't move, right? Mm. You're pulling with your arms. The moment you get up to walk, what does your spine do? It has to move, right? So now did you just maintain neutral spine or did your neutral spine go to crap? You know, and that's for me, that's the thing trying to, okay, do you own that movement? Does your left side and right side do what it's supposed to do? You know, do your arms swing? Do you look like a robot when you're walking? You know, or are you planking the entire time you're trying to walk? You know, it's like at that time, you're trying to maintain neutral spine. It doesn't work.
Wow. Yeah. Cause that was, I remember for me, one of the aha moments along those lines was with a behind the neck pull down and shoulder press, which we had been taught as trainers that those were bad.
That'll destroy your shoulders.
Yeah, they'll destroy your shoulders. Yeah. Don't ever do these. Don't ever teach these. And I was watching a video on YouTube with Mario Pujanowski. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's one of the world's strongest men competitors. He's the guy that looks like a bodybuilder, but he like beat everybody. And there was a video on YouTube of him doing a behind the neck press with like 300 pounds. And he literally had it on his traps like he was doing a squat. Then he'd almost like jerk it up and press it up. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, God, he's so strong. He's got incredible range of motion. I'm seeing some of these athletes do this movement and they're not hurting themselves. And then it dawned on me, if your body can move a particular way, doesn't it make sense to try to strengthen it with good control, with good stability, so that if you do that movement, because life never mimics perfect form, right?
No.
That you'll be better off. And so I started training in that way, and I started moving better. You know, I started feeling better. So
it's definitely that gray area, though, right? It's one of those areas as professionals.
That's why I say with control, with stability.
It's such a challenge to try and get people to understand that concept. Because we all know form is so important. It's so crucial. I found so let's take something as simple like a plank or like a floor bridge. You know, most trainers, and this was something that it started to, and I was definitely a trainer that did this poorly in the beginning of my career, is, you know, we were taught, I took CES, so I understood like the benefits of teaching a floor bridge. But even just teaching a floor bridge and then teaching someone to do a floor bridge correctly is a huge difference. Like, so if you do a floor bridge with somebody on the ground and they have an excessive, you know, anterior pelvic tilt, and you just have them do the movement, their body is going to choose the position that it's the hips are already in. So getting that person to roll the pelvis before they go into that floor bridge and to keep it into that position while they go up is a night and day difference than just having them do the floor bridge. And to the average eye that's just looking at the client doing the floor bridge, they both look almost exactly the same if you don't know how to look at the pelvis and pay attention to that. And that was kind of an aha moment for me when I realized, well, we're trying to repattern something right now. We're trying to fix a major deviation. My books are telling me I should do these types of movements, so I'm doing that with my clients. But the part that was missing was getting them to make the connection and understand that. I find that one of the most challenging things. Do you notice that a lot with that you see with other professionals, like doing movements? And what are some things that you've noticed like along those lines? Do you see that too?
I think for me, what I've seen in the, you know, even now is we talk about let's train a pattern. But take a golfer, look at Tiger Woods, right? What has he been trying to do this entire time? Get back to playing golf. And he finally did this weekend. But what is he doing, right? He keeps repeating same patterns over and over and over again. Well, is it the pattern that he keeps repeating, or is it the information that we want to train, right? And I posted that up on your guys' forum as
well. What do you mean by that?
You want to train the information at hand, right? So your body is going to adapt and pattern whatever it wants to do. A golfer's not going to go out there and swing 100 times and swing exactly the same 100 times, right? So did they have the right pattern? How many times that 100 do they actually have a correct pattern? We don't know, right? So what's the information coming in? What's the body telling you? What's your foot positioning? What's your feet? You know, what's your hands? What's, you know, what are all these different areas in your body that are telling you to swing properly or to walk properly or to jump properly? What does that mean, you know, every single time?
How do you
interpret information?
All those signals.
Can you give a simple example of that, like maybe with a squat or something like that, of like what you're saying?
Let's just go back to a plank, right? Okay. You know, so Sal did a posterior pelvic plank. I would take someone now and can they go in to roll themselves into an anterior pelvic, you know, tilt?
While holding
a plank. And then can they go back into a posterior pelvic tilt? So now as you watch the body starting to shudder, that information is telling you what? They can't control that position through that movement.
Yeah.
You know, so now what pattern are they training? Well, heck, they go from seated or sitting on the toilet to standing, right? Flex to extended. You know, so if they're losing that movement, you know, what's the body going to do? It's going to cheat that movement. So you're going to stay away from that because it doesn't want to go there. You know, so if it doesn't want to go there, you lose control over that area. Well, again, we know that later on in life when you develop pain. And I see it all the time. I didn't have pain. I just talked to a guy this morning. You know, I didn't have pain in my shoulder. Well, show me your swimming stroke. Well, you're rotating like crazy. You don't even have the proper shoulder mobility necessary. Well, I didn't have pain 3 months ago, but it didn't mean you didn't have a shoulder problem. Right. You know, you just had pain. You did something
that's
your shoulder off.
That's a great point. It's like the pain, it comes, once you get pain, it's almost like, okay, now we're beyond,
late.
We've been ignoring this information for so long and now your body's, yelling at you. Whereas before it was kind of whispering like, hey, fix your stroke. And now it's like, you need to fucking fix your stroke, man.
Well, and a lot of that is, you know, we use the information at hand, meaning that if we're flexible, we're only flexible in the directions that we're going to use it, right? We don't have to reach behind us. Thus, people don't have range of motion behind us anymore, right? Everything we do is forward-based, you know, sitting at a computer all day long. So if they want to use that information, all of a sudden they have to teach their body to go back to where's that information stored. The brain knows what to do, but the body's now locked itself down. So now all of a sudden you lose the ability to move your shoulder behind your head.
Wow. Right. So let's...
Which I'll tell you, you're handcuffed to a rotation. I don't know if that's what you call it. That's what I called it after you
talked
to me. The handcuff with a rotation was like a game changer for me in creating that tension. Yep. You know, I use that as a major primer before I do any of my workouts yep. now. And it's been like game changer for me because you're right. We just stopped communicating back there. We yep. never do anything yeah. back no. there. But yet we do exercises and movements where we want to be in that position or we want to be able to activate those muscles, right? And boy, waking that up and priming that before I go do in my major lifts, God, it's been game changer.
That's for a me. Good. That's a good direction, Adam. How important is what you do before your workout in terms of results and how your body moves and all that stuff? Not just the workout itself, but what you do before your workout. How important is that?
So it's funny you say that because I talk about that often with all of my clients. I'm like, if you think about it, you should be able to jump into a squat and do a squat. Right, you should be able to jump into a lunge and do a lunge. You know, how much warm up do we really need for warm up? This is just again, just my own sort of thought process mm-hmm. on this. And now, if you're going to go lift heavy, okay, you need to prime your system. I get it. But does a dog sit there and prime its system? You throw a ball to it?
No.
No, it takes off at 60 miles an hour to pick up that ball and run back to you, and it's like going, I didn't blow a hammy, I didn't toss my back out, right? But what it do? What's it do all day long? It gets up and it moves all day long. It flexes, extends, it stretches all day long. So it's priming its body through its 5 seconds of stretch all day long, where we now think, oh, let's go, you know, and stretch for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes before or 30 minutes beforehand, and let's go lift. Well, again, did you just sit there and did you tell your body actually what it needs to do or just go through motions again?
Mm.
You know, so
it sounds like, I mean, one of the main problems with warm up is that the goal, the only goal is to prevent
Well, it's perspiration.
Well, right? Perspiration, yeah. Prevent injury, but yeah. That's like the minimum, right? Yeah. That's the minimum it should do. In reality, yeah. What should it, you know, it should get the body ready
For
that movement. Yeah. Well, so it should be much more specific. It should be programmed.
Correct.
Well, this is also, I definitely have taken a page from you where, you know, I've, even since we've just met in the last, year or so, it's evolved my programming for my own clients. So let's take an example. You know, I've got a client right now. I just had her in the other day and I assessed her. She had all these imbalances. And so I designed all these. Okay, these are going to be your priming movements for sure before you ever do any of these exercises. So I first prescribed that and say, okay, this is what I want it to look like. Now, what I'm teaching you right now as far as priming the body, I want you doing that as much as possible throughout the day. If you're in the kitchen, you're doing dishes, or you're waiting for something to heat on the stove and you've got 90 seconds, get down and do this, this, and this, and just continue to do that. This is not something that's designed to fatigue you. It's not designed to, you know, make you sore or build a bunch of muscle. We are trying to create new patterns, better movement patterns in you. And I want you to do it as much as possible. Therefore, when you do come to do your workouts, you won't feel that need to always have to do all this stuff just to get you ready to lift a weight because your body is ready to hop right into that squat.
So. How important is frequency when someone's trying to practice, you know, movement? If you show someone, I want you to do this thing to correct this particular issue, is it more important for them to practice it frequently or is it more important for them to do it real intensely, infrequently?
No, it's, you sprain your ankle, how fast does it take you to, you know, to limp mm-hmm. right then? But then how long does it take you to get rid of that limp, right? There's no sets and reps involved to get you out of that limp. Mm-hmm. It's a pattern, right? So mm-hmm. as your body adapts, your new normal happens when you're out of pain, mm-hmm. right? So if you're training or you're teaching someone, okay, what's the movement that we want you to do? I want you doing that, not for 20 minutes one time a day. I want you doing it 20 times at 1 minute, but 20 times
so
throughout the day.
So frequency, very, very important.
For sure, because what's the brain going to keep telling you? Yeah. Oh, crap, we're back here doing it again. Oh, and we're doing it again another hour later. Oh, and again another hour later. We're training that information, right? So as you're training that information, what's the brain going to start to do? It's going to realize, okay, you keep doing the same thing. There's a reason why you're doing it. Let's allow you to do it a little bit more.
Well, this was fantastic. Just reminds me of one of our aha moments that we talk a lot about on the show too, of like that moment when we got away from the bro split type of workouts and started to transition into this more full body type of routine and more frequency of it. Yep. Because, you know, and I just feel like it seems so obvious to me. And I don't know if a lot of that is just experience or if it's age now. And we talk about all these aches and pains. And I mean, even being trainers, I feel like it's taken me this long before I noticed all that stuff. Like, oh, now all this bothers me. And I feel like we speak so passionately on the show because we want to help those guys and girls that are 17, 25 years old that don't feel any pain right now, but get them to understand that what you're doing right now, no matter what it is, you're creating these patterns in your body. And are they ideal for you? And will it set you up in the future for these aches and pains and understanding how to combat that now?
Well, one of the things I love about sending a client to you is that it's, you can kind of take them through the process of like, okay, I'm going to help you to understand, you know, some areas that are inactive and some areas that, you know, you may not even have known that these patterns are what you've established. And now, as far as like figuring all that out, like who are some like major leaders in the industry you've seen that have really come up with, you know, solid answers to being able to assess and understand, like, you know, how these patterns exist and like, now how do we improve on this?
The patterning itself has been changing for a while. I mean, Gray Cook, he, you know, PT, that the book Movement, amazing, you know, yep, helped develop FMS and the SFMA, you know, for more medical professionals, FMS more, you know, for the trainer or massage therapist, or again, chiros as well. Just a quick little assessment tool. You know, in golf, you know, there's Greg Rose, you know, for right now, like a barefoot training, you know, Dr. Emily Spiekel, who's she's a podiatrist out of New York. We've got Perry Nicholson, who's a Stop Chasing Pain, which I've sent a couple guys, you know, on, you know, on the forum, you know, to go see him out in the New York area. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Dr. Andrea Ospina. I mean, amazing stuff that I'm learning from him, you know, on a daily basis on that stuff, you know. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are coming up and that are game changers, but it's always evolving, you know, and that's sort of the cool thing is, and for me, you know, as a practitioner, you know, is I'm pulling everything from all these different people. So there's not one thing that I'm doing,
which is
from
really
one
rare
area.
Yeah. And that's why I commend you a lot on that, because, you know, you're able to take all this excess information out there that's solid and then sort of organize it in a way that, you know, you can apply it from all these different dimensions. So.
Excellent. We love having you on the forum, by the way.
Exactly.
Great value. So, question, you work, I'm sure you work with people who also work with personal trainers. So the trainers send them to you.
All the time.
What are some of the biggest challenges you see, or maybe irritations that you have with personal trainers and their clients?
I don't know. No irritations. You know, a lot of the trainers that I work with are, again, open-minded, you know, to
they're sending them to you. So yeah. They're probably on the smarter side of trainers.
Yeah, so I think the cool thing is I call it my triangle of care. You know, it's me, it's the trainer, it's the client, or it's me, it's the MD and the client, or, you know, there's more involved. Is there a PT? Is there an MD? Is there, you know, a personal trainer? And so as we all get on the same page, then all of a sudden it looks like, hey, we're in this group effort to make you better, not each individual. You know, so when I'm now, you know, writing back what I think, you know, to the trainers, what I saw, that's all it is, what I saw. What you do is what you do. You're the expert when it comes to the exercise. I'll break you down into little minute movements. That's not my job, is to exercise you or get you more fit, you know, or whatever. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so at that point it's like, hey, go out there and you handle that business. I'll do mine on my end. We'll just keep in the loop and let's just work from there.
And then you communicate back to the trainer, do this with your client, do that with your client, and then they go back to you. And that's the way it should be.
It's been huge for me. I mean, I don't know how many he probably knows better than I do how many actual people have came from me or not, but I've been sending people that way for quite some time now since we met, and he'll send over like, hey, here's what's going on with her body. This is what I'm working on with her right now. And like, that's all I need. Like, and I really have sent him all the hard ones. Like, I don't send him all my clients.
Yeah, me too.
I send all my headaches. Like, because I try my best.
Please.
I try and take the
overhaul this.
I try and take the knowledge that I've learned from him and all the names he was name dropping, and like the Kelly Starrett's. And I'm big into all these guys. And I've taken bits of all of their schooling and education and information they put out there. And I try and troubleshoot and figure it out for my people. But there's definitely still ones that I'm like, I'm baffled. I can't put it together. Or I can't seem to help them. Or I don't have the right words to express. And I always send them over to Brink. Yeah. But then he's come. And then
they just need a different person to say it.
Yeah, right. You know, like that helps
a lot of times. Just a different way of saying it
as
well.
Exactly.
That is very, very true. You just reinforce something that I've been trying to get him to do. And then now that you've said it, then you give me the information. Yep. Then now I can take that and build upon it. Like, okay, I get it. He's telling you to do this. I know why he's telling you to do that. We need to work on this. So we work on this. And then as we get better on that, this is how we're going to progress that from there too. So, I mean, having you on the forum too, Sal touched on it a little bit, has been so awesome. It was so great to see you get on there and start helping a lot of people. Because we get a lot of people, if you're not on the forum already, a lot of people will post like a video of their form, you know, and they want us to critique it. And now having your eyes on there too, in addition to ours, has just been a huge asset for people that are on there. It's been awesome.
It's funny the other day, because I commented on a guy's squat, and he's like, this is the first time I've ever, you know, really squatted. So, you know, just let me know what you think. And he actually had a really good squat. You know, wasn't bad at all. But then again, for me, this is just what I do. I broke it down. I'm like, okay, look at your right foot. You probably do this and this and this and this, you know. And he's like, holy crap, didn't realize that a squat is going to do that, or, you know, I have to do all this to make my squat better. Yeah. It's like, well, again, it's the little things that are going to get you better at it. It's not the gross movement. It's a little movement that we never pay attention to.
That's the best, though. There's nothing more, and I'm sure you can probably attest to this, like, I love to take somebody and give them a little bit of information like that and then watch them make that connection. Oh, yeah. Like, this is why I hurt. Yeah. Oh, my God. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, Justin, didn't you have a client you sent to Brink that actually literally broke down crying?
Yeah.
Afterwards, frozen shoulder or whatever.
Yeah, she told me all about it. Yeah. It was just this release, you know, that needed to happen. And it was, she was embarrassed about it by a little bit, right?
Oh,
yeah.
But I mean, we have that comment. I see it quite often, you know, where when you're dealing with soft tissue imbalances, or again, you know, in her case was a frozen shoulder, you know, and or a frozen shoulder that was sort of undiagnosed, you know, and at that point we get in there and start to release it. There's a huge emotional component that goes into someone's shoulder or arm or hip that hasn't worked in who knows how long, you know, and whether it's just that emotional tie or it's pain or all the above, right? I mean, everyone's degree of pain is completely different. And it's funny because I hear it all the time. It's like, oh, I have such a high pain tolerance. You know, when I do soft tissue therapy and a lot of them, I'm just using my middle finger and index finger. But yet I'm just pushing on certain spots and it will light them up. And they're like, holy crap, I didn't realize that this was as painful as what it is.
Yeah.
So I want to get into some things that are, I don't even know the right word I want to use here.
Controversial?
Maybe, yes. Maybe.
I could expect that from you.
Yeah. So, I think you're a great person to share about this because I don't think you're biased. I think even, and I know that you are certified in most of them, like your ART and your... cupping and God, there's so many different ones out there. Graston. Like, can you elaborate for people a little bit on all those techniques, how you would use them, why you would use them, your theories on the importance of them and not like where is the place for these things that I feel like become very trendy? Like right now in the bodybuilding world. And this is what just annoys me when I see this stuff is, you know, a lot of my peers right now are heavy into the gas or whatever.
Graston.
Yeah. Right? I keep getting there it up. And
break down the muscle fibers so they can grow.
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. And I'm just like,
so that doesn't happen.
So elaborate for us, share with people.
I've never really seen it, but it doesn't mean it can't happen, but I know you're going to grow because you're breaking down the capillaries are going to swell like crazy. So now if they're back to the same size the next day, well then that's a problem.
Yeah. Let's start with that. Let's explain the grass thing. But why are so many bodybuilders using it? Is there a benefit and what does it do?
I don't know what their theory is. Just what I keep hearing, you know, is if they get it done on their entire back, there's a potential for them to fill out more. Again, I don't know if that's, again, from the swelling that's going on because that practitioner just hammered them, you know? It's like, why are we going so deep on that? We're creating more scar tissue, if you will.
So that's what I'm wondering because, I mean, these guys are like in pain.
Oh,
I mean,
and they're black and blue.
They're bruising and it's turning into the
looks
same.
Looks like medieval torture.
So the same thing that I was annoyed by when I went through the competing process when I saw the way these competitors approached diet and training of making a martyr of themselves. I feel like they've now moved on to this technique and it's like who can look the worst from it? Like who has the most
I got flogged.
Who had the most pain from it? Who's like the reddest from it? And they just talk about how amazing the relief is.
I got dragged behind a truck.
Yeah. Like
check this out.
Where is this coming from? What where does it hold? Does it hold any water? Is there any benefit to it? Like where would you use it if you were to use
it? On my end, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do more of a brushing technique, but I'm going to put them into different positions of movement, right? Because I want to try and release the fascia. If we can get the fascia to release, then the muscle's going to, you know, move. The body's just going to move better. If the body's going to move better, why would that muscle not look better? You know? So I'm not getting in there to hammer them by any means. It's just a matter of, all right, what can we do to try and open up this area a little bit more? Again, you go back into the ARTs. So all these are different soft tissue techniques, you know, that people can utilize for all different, you know, reasons. So whether a foam roller actually works, you know, or the Graston technique works, I mean, everyone is obviously individualized. Because I get some people that come in and say, this was the gold for me. You know, this guy did this one time, my shoulder was 100%. okay, and if I would have hit you with a 2x4, would it have been 100% too? We don't know, right? That's the hard part, you know, so.
It seems to me like all these methods that do improve range of motion or do improve the way a muscle functions, everything from ART to Graston to foam rolling, it all goes down to the central nervous system. It feels like, am I accurate when I say that?
Yeah.
You know, applying, massage therapy is another one, you know, increasing a muscle's pliability. I don't think you're really changing the muscle. I'm not like kneading a piece of clay that gets warmed up and then it feels like pressing on the muscle. All it does is it gets the CNS to kind of stop being partially activated in that muscle.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. So then it can be very individual.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Your central nervous system is extremely individual. Yes. I experienced this the other day when I meditated, which I just started really getting into, and then I went right into a full squat, and I didn't do any nothing to warm up, nothing whatever, and squats can be very tough for me, and I went right into it. And it was because the meditation obviously got my CNS to chill out a little.
And you didn't warm up at all.
Nothing.
Which is amazing, right? Because you then moved better than what you did before.
Yeah.
Because you told yourself, hey, I can do this.
Very interesting.
Right? Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, this is all speculative, but do you think heavy stimulant use, like a lot of athletes will take pre-workouts and stuff like that with lots of ridiculous, you know, like they have caffeine, but ridiculous amounts and other stuff. Do you think that overstimulation of the CNS could inhibit somebody's...
Oh, 100% yes.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. I go back to years ago, so when I was helping develop the whole educational manual for Rock Tape, you know, and one of our first classes when we first started doing it, and I was hosting an FMS, which is the functional movement screen, at my office, and we had a guy, and we were all testing to try and get a specific score, and the score is a 21. And so we taped his posterior chain, and I think his baseline score at that point was like a 9. We taped his posterior, which 9 is horrible. Yeah. So we taped his posterior chain. He jumped up to a 14, you know, just by taping his posterior chain. So, okay, we wanted to see what's going on again. All right, we got some stimulus in the CNS. Cool. You know, he bettered his score. Now, whether or not his body's learning, you know, through this process again, we don't know. But so we taped his posterior chain, and then we taped his anterior line. He dropped back down to like, I think it was like an 11, you know? Mm. So now all of a sudden we're getting a conflict of interest. We've got anterior chain firing, posterior chain firing. Mm-hmm. Now we have a decrease in score, right? Well, if we're thinking, if we're That's heightening it, why would we not get higher? Well, clearly he couldn't communicate front and back anymore.
It was the communication that was the issue.
There we go. Yeah.
And that, and so this makes so much sense.
That's a very fascinating.
So much sense.
Well, I've been thinking about this lately quite a bit. I brought it up on a recent episode about the meditation and then having the mobility type thing. And it made me realize it's not just about getting the central nervous system amped the hell up.
No.
It's about getting it right.
Yes.
Yeah. Because too low isn't good.
Yeah.
And too high or wrong isn't good either.
And waking up the dormant ones, right?
Yeah. From there, again, we took the posterior line off then and did anterior chain, and he had jumped like up to an 11. Mm-hmm. You know, so his numbers were fluctuating. So again, at that point, was he learning? He was, but he was still failing. You know, so at that point, we're like, wow, okay, what was the most bang for his buck? Posterior chain.
Yeah.
See, what's most people not able to do?
That's the
Can't
focus.
Get their backside to do what it needs to do.
Talk about full circle, because chiropractic, since its invention, has been all about getting the central nervous system to work optimally. Right? I've always had chiropractors tell me, you know, if you've got a subluxation here, the central nervous system can't fire in these areas, and they have, of course, a poster of the central nervous system, and it looks like wires coming out of the body.
Yeah.
But what they did was just adjustments. But there's a million and one different ways to get the CNS to, you know, move the way you want it to, and then train those new patterns. And it just sounds to me like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you're just learning as many of the different tools as you possibly can, because every individual might respond differently to each different
definitely.
Tool.
It's like, I mean, I could put 10 people in line and they'll have low back issues. Why am I going to give every single person a hamstring stretch?
Yeah.
Right? But yet you go online and that's what going to tell you to do. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, stretch your hamstrings. Well, why? If I can sit there and put my elbows on the ground, why do I have to stretch my elbow, you know, my hamstrings?
Would you say your method is less about how you treat them and more about how you figure out how to treat them?
How to figure out.
Uh-huh. How to figure out.
It's a puzzle.
Yeah.
So every single person is individualized. So again, I don't deal with protocols in the office whatsoever. I don't know what I'm going to give you when you come into the office. I may have an idea based on what we talk about,
right.
But once we start taking you through all of our assessments, then at that point is where we're going to really hone in. And I'm only going to give you maybe 1, 2, max is going to be 3. You know, because you hit three mark and people forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give you two. All right, go home, work on that. I'll see you in a week. Come on back. Let's see, you know, what you can do.
Now, let me ask you this. What are some of the things that you think are causing people, CNS, to fire, you know, quote unquote, improperly? Either too much stimulus in one area, not enough in another area? Can it be everything?
Are there genetic factors? Well, is it just environmental?
Yeah. I mean, there obviously can be genetic issues, you know, going on. But I think for majority of people, it's the fact that since we're 1 year old, what have we done? Mm-hmm. We strap shoes and socks on our feet,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, your foot has got, what, 170 muscles, ligaments, and tendons or something, you know, thereof, mm-hmm. and 26 bones. And, I mean, you got a crap load of stuff in the feet. But yet we wear shoes and socks all the time. We never stimulate our feet.
We basically put a cast on them right away.
Exactly.
And I use that analogy all the time after, especially after you and you really breaking my feet down of just thinking like, oh my God, like think about when you, if you've ever broken your leg or your arm or that and you cast it, like how, like literally what it feels like when you take the cast off and to think that was just for a few months that you probably had it on. Imagine you've been wearing shoes for
forever.
Yeah, forever. How disconnected you are to that area.
Well, not only that, but if you look at the amount of sensory receptors on the hands, the second place that probably that comes close second is the feet, right? Yep. Hands and feet have the most sensory receptors. People don't realize that there's a big part, there's large parts of the brain that are dedicated to reading the information that comes from your hands and your feet.
The homunculus.
And if my feet are constantly covered, that part of my brain is literally not developed like it could be. So I'm losing out on all these neural connections.
Yeah.
And we do know we do know pretty conclusively that when we create more neural connections and solidify them, the brain works better.
Yeah.
So it's not a far stretch to say that improving that with your feet would improve other aspects of the way your brain.
That's right. You're gonna get smarter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, literally, look. You take a child, you have them learn music, and they get better at math. Why?
Yeah.
Why are they getting better at math when they're doing music? What the hell is the connection between
part of the brain? Yeah.
It's because the brain. Firing. Exactly. The brain is increasing its the connections between different parts of the brain. There's better neural connectivity. I think you're talking about the feet is one of them. What about the emotional component? Because I know for myself, I could literally.
As far as stress and things like that?
Yeah. How does that. Do you look at that at all with patients?
All
or
the
do
time.
You, really?
All the time. Really? I mean, you look at. I mean, here in our society, you know, just in the Silicon Valley, right? Everyone's in, you know, they're desk jockeys, right? So as they're wearing shoulders as their earrings, you know, all the time, they wonder why they have these neck issues. I'm like, well, are you stressed out? Are you, you know, what are you doing at your desk? Oh, I'm so stressed. I'm like, well, show me how much stress weighs.
Mm.
You know, again, stress is a reactionary component to what we perceive as a problem, right? Because I could put them out in the cold and they're going to look exactly the same in the cold as they do when they're stressed out.
Wow.
Right? So again, how do we get their brain to calm themselves down, which is great with that Brain FM. Stuff I've been now using, you know, in the office itself just as, hey.
Beautiful
just,
plug, dude.
Yeah,
thank you.
Just, you know, so as we work on that just in the office, I just want to see, hey, does it make, you know, a change?
Yeah.
And if I change one person out of the 20 plus that I see in a day, hey, then that's amazing right there, just on the emotional side of things.
Right.
Wow, this is all mind-blowing stuff because now I'm making all these different connections.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we know for sure, we've done several studies on this, that music will improve performance.
Yeah.
How? You know, listening to the right music.
Yeah.
It's that emotional release. Yeah. Like I listen to angry music, it makes me feel stronger because I go, and I probably am stronger as a result of it.
Association to that.
And it's that, right there.
I mean, I think we associate, you know, as working out in a gym, you know, as we have to listen to that music, it's going to get us amped.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom, she works out, she listens to, you know, church talks. You know, so it's like she's listening to these church songs, but yet that's what's amping her up.
Yeah. The power of Christ compels you.
Compels you. You know, if that's what she wants to do, go right ahead. Right. You know, it's not what I'm going to listen to.
Wow.
You know,
but. Yeah, I remember years ago when I had my wellness studio, I had a client I had a client come in that was a yoga instructor, and she was she did yoga every single day, if not twice a day, very well known in the area. And she came to me because she had hip problems. And what blew me away at the time, because it hadn't occurred to me, this was years ago, that you could have incredible range of motion and yet have dysfunction. Because she was a yoga instructor, her flexibility was silly. I mean, she could put her foot behind her head without even, you know, just bring her foot right behind her head. She could sit and lay flat and pigeon and do all do all these different things. But that's when I realized that range of motion without strength was instability.
I would say not strength, control.
Control.
Right? Because again, I see a ton
of control within, yes, within it.
So I see a ton of dancers, right? Because I think the way that we think of strength, a yogi is going to think of strength completely different than a bodybuilder, right? So if we look at control, does the bodybuilder have the control necessary to lift the weight over their head or to do a squat? Well, does the yogi have the same control to do the same exact movement? They do, but strength is now completely different. Mm. So that's something I've been trying to get my clients to understand is there's a difference between strength and control.
I see.
Because if you can control the movement, your strength will go up. Mm-hmm. And I've done that just in the past year where I started, you know, the kin stretch back, you know, it's been a year now, you know, the functional range conditioning stuff for my kin stretch and when I went into animal flow. So I took about 7 months off of lifting weights completely and just did nothing but body weight stuff. Mm-hmm. And then started lifting again
for a year,
you know, about 3 months ago, actually, when I started your MAPS performance.
Yeah.
You know, I did that, you know, and then when I started MAPS Red 2 weeks ago,
excellent.
You know, all of a sudden I've watched, you know, you said you're going to see your strength go up. I've seen it go up in the 2 weeks that I've been doing just MAPS Red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm on my third week, you know, of phase one, you know, of that. And I'm just watching my strength go up, but I'm also still paying attention to, okay, how's my body able to control its natural movement with no weight? Mm. You know, am I losing that or am I still maintaining that? And that's something that I work on, you know, and I just sort of, you know, will put in some performance stuff, you know, into my off days or my foundational days.
Mm. So let me ask your opinion on this. This is something that I've done in the past and I want to make sure I'm doing this right when I train people. But if I'm trying to improve their, maybe the right word is mobility, their overall mobility, control and stability and within ranges of motion. If I have a client who, let's say, has really poor, they can't touch their toes. We'll just use a simple example. The first thing I try to do is improve range of motion. Then I try to have them become more controlled within that range of motion. So I'll start with passive stretching where I'm holding their leg up and stretching them, but then I'm having them provide resistance so that they can gain control within that range of motion. Sort of. Would that be the right progression?
Well, so what I look at is, do they have the active ability to, or where are they lacking the active control?
Okay.
Right? So passively is great. So if I can take a shoulder and I can make them do a complete circle, right? Or again, like you said, stretching a hamstring, right? They can go up to 90 degrees, but now all of a sudden, can they lift it to 90 degrees?
I see.
So you passively can get it there, but now all of a sudden, they have a lack of active control to actually elevate their leg to the same position that you're just in.
Mm.
That becomes a problem. So you can sit there and stretch them passively all you want. They have no active control. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to the yogis or, you know, a lot of my dancers. They can do the splits. But now what can they do with the splits when they're in the split?
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, so the opposite muscle is just as important as the one you're stretching.
Well, again, let's go back into reciprocal inhibition now. Yeah. You know, and that's something that, you know, has been disproven. You know, I mean, it's
oh really?
You know, and it shows where, you know, let's say you lift your leg up off the ground, right, and you go to contract your quad and your hamstring doesn't allow you to go any further. What muscles are still firing, right? Your hamstring is firing and your quad is firing still at the same time. Whereas, you know, we're taught that if we fire that quad, our hamstring should relax.
Holy shit.
Right? If that means that they can't lift that leg and straighten it out at the same time, is reciprocal inhibition actually working?
Mm.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Excellent. This is also why we implemented the fortification process in MAPS Yellow too. This is the last piece to MAPS Yellow is you prime the body, you train these good patterns, and then afterwards you fortify them. Like you go back and you create these tension type movements where you are actively taking yourself into this position and creating tension in that position to help fortify that good connection that what we're trying to pattern.
And that's what, like that kin stretch, that's what, you know, with you know, Andre Ospina or Dewey Nielsen. I mean, if you watch these guys on YouTube, you'll see their hands out always and squeezing down. They're irradiating, right? They're solidifying.
Yeah.
They're activating. Can you explain everything through their body?
Yeah. I've heard that term and I've started to use that term, but I want to know specifically like the concept behind that and like
irradiation
the theory. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the law of irradiation. So as you know, as you're radiating it all down your body, let's say I want to just move my neck right into the biggest circle possible. Well, I know if I don't do that, I can create circles of my neck. Well, what other areas are now compensating? right? Am I going to cheat through somewhere else because I can't move how I need to? So I'm going to thus make my body do what it wants to do mm-hmm. by cheating somewhere else. So with this this irradiation, you know, this solidifying, right? I am now activating everything. I'm squeezing everything at 100% mm-hmm. while I'm starting to still create, whether it's a shoulder circle or it's a neck circle. Because at that point, you're not cheating anywhere else. But mm-hmm. right? If you're rotating, then you know you're not squeezing at your 100% effort, right? So now we can sit there and we can go directly into that segment, right? Or those segments and try and create better quality of movement through that joint where you're not cheating anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. It's all central nervous system training.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
it's 100% yes. training the CNS to do what you want it to do.
What you want it to do.
Which I think is crazy because I feel like there's been a huge disconnect or...
not been a part of fitness programming.
Yeah, like, I mean, even all of my experience as a trainer, it's just... I have talked more about central nervous system in the last probably 3 years than I have in my entire career.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, before that, it was
And you kind of knew about it with, like, isometrics, and you knew about sure. some people PNF. Using PNF, you know,
different techniques. Into going further, but doesn't that can hold that position afterwards.
Exactly.
Right? And that's I think, the biggest one is...
They didn't internalize it, make it, like, an intrinsic thing that you had to produce.
Yeah, foam rolling, right? You're not changing anything via the CNS, right? We're just rolling out. Yeah, we're creating a different little pattern that's on there, and yeah, they might be more flexible afterwards, but... Why do they have to do it the next day again? And then they get pissed off. Why? Because they have to foam roll everything every single day. Well, they're not changing anything. Right? They never taught the CNS to actually hold that new position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They didn't teach themselves, hey, at 100% effort, we actually got this much further out of our range of motion through our hips or our shoulder or ankle or whatever that we're now trying to work on. And now let's maintain that position.
Yeah.
This is
that's such a key point because we've brought up foam rolling and how we've sort of shifted gears completely to more mobility type you know, movements and things like that to really reinforce those patterns.
I eliminated it.
Yeah, I have too. I'm just saying that like
I found more benefit foam rolling after my workout than I ever did before my workout. Afterwards, when I lay on the foam roller and I stay tight and get things, I've got more benefit from doing it that than I ever did before.
But you're not doing it to now improve your range of motion. You're doing it probably more as like that, you know, post-event massage, right? Where you get in there and just rolling yourself and like loosening up those muscles because you just worked, you know, you worked them hard, right? So you feel better afterwards.
And it also, I feel like it's, especially because I do it targeted, it solidifies kind of some of the signals that I had sent with my workout beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, something else that just came up that just really, you know, came to me right now is we see progressions because what you're talking about, what Dr. Brink, it seems like you're talking about is progressing yourself through your mobility movements, progressing yourself through, you know, different things rather than doing the same warm up every single time.
Yep,
right. And that is sorely lacking. Definitely. There's lots of ways to progress your workout, but how do you progress how you set yourself up?
Yep. You know, and you got to, I think you have to, you know, prime your body for what is that movement that you're looking at doing that day? Are you squatting? Are you lunging? Are you doing something more plyo? You know, what's the activity? Doing more shoulder stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to make sure I turn my shoulders on. I want to make sure I get the best range of motion out of my shoulder prior to me doing an overhead press.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or again, I mean, I watch people do pull-ups all the time. Do they have scap control? You know, can you sit there and actually draw circles with your scapula?
That is very hard to do, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. But how much, again, you know, you can sit there and press weight over your head, but do you really have the control necessary through, you know, your scapulothoracic joint, you know, or to your GH joint? And where do most people, you know, start creating issues is right at the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, let's assess everything all the way back to that T-spine,
mm-hmm.
right? So
this is also why I've actually started the my overhead press has even changed the way I do it. Like I put a lot of emphasis on the stabilization process on the top. Like I'll hold my overhead press for about 3 to 5 seconds in that position over my head to really concentrate on the scapula for that exact. When I realized, because I tried to, I don't remember when it was to go do that. I watched a YouTube video and I was I don't remember if it was you and I who talked first about it or you and you suggested or asked me if I could do it. And I watched the video and I watched the guy hanging from a pull-up bar and I watched him like he had the ability to articulate one side and then the other side and then make these circles. And it looks really simple. Like when you see someone do it, you're like, oh, and then you get in there and it was just to see that like, holy shit, like I don't have the connection there to even control a very simple movement like that of making these circles.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, like, I mean, light bulb went off for me too. It's just like, I'm just anytime I have a movement where I can put emphasis on that control back there, I'm going to. So now when I overhead press, I don't just overhead press, go up, then come down, go up and come down. I go up, I stabilize, and I'm really concentrating back in that whole thoracic area of how am I pulling my scapula together? Am I able to really stabilize from there, or am I just getting it up over my head and then coming back down? So
Yeah, we talked earlier about how stimulants can affect, you know, how tight you're going to feel or how much your mobility. And I've always, for a while now, I've talked to clients about changing their diets and how that influences their movements and inflammation. Is that on the right track as well?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You go back to your stimulant. What's that doing? That's just amping you up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that teaching what your body needs to be doing when you're not amped? Right, and you need your shoulders to work all day long, not just during that 1 hour of your training session.
God, you're just amping up a poor recruitment pattern if you're just getting amped.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, what do you notice with food? What are some of the worst offenders when, you know, if you start to tell people, like, start avoiding these and that, what are some of the common? I know it's individual, but are there some common, you know, culprits that you see?
I think everyone is so different when it comes to that. And that's, for me, is just, again, dealing for you guys for the past, you know, few months is where I've really dived, you know, more into that nutritional aspect of things just in myself. You know, I mean, I've been playing with intermittent fasting now probably for the past, you know, 5.5-6 months, you know, to where that I've got that pretty much dialed in to where if I want to go 24 hours, I'll go 24 hours.
Excellent.
You know, sweet. Pretty easy on that end. You know, I'm now starting to dive into more of that ketogenic diet. Mm-hmm. I want to try it, you know, and so for me, just in my office, is I try everything before I'm going to sit there and tell you, hey,
this you want to have the experience.
Exactly. It's just like any move that I do in the office, I will do it and I'll show you that I can do it. I'm not going to give you something I can't do.
Mm.
You know, so I want to make sure that, hey, if I'm giving this to you and you need me to show you how to do it, then I'm going to show you how to do it. You know, so the nutrition is one that I've been weak on. But now, again, just dealing with you guys and listening to, you know, all the different nutritional things, it's like, all right, let me jump in. And same thing with Kingsbury. I mean, I've watched him now for years and watched his diet, you know, ebb and flow and change, you know, just as a professional athlete, now as a dad, and what he's doing just as a businessman now. And it's like, all right, I'm gonna try and jump into some of the stuff that he's doing.
That's, what did you notice from fasting, from your own personal experience?
First, it really sucked. but now, I mean, it's gotten fairly easy now. You know, and I can, you know, have one meal a day and be completely fine, you know, and not lose weight and still have energy. And I mean, like this morning, I started my day this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, seeing people. So I was up at 5 o'clock this morning, you know, and, you know, I raced from, you know, a corporate, you know, location where I was at 6 to 7:30, started at 8 o'clock, you know, jumped over here, you know, and now I'll see you guys and I go back and I work till 6 tonight, you know. So, I mean, it's like, and whether I'm eating or not, my body's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Haven't you felt like some of the panic in your life has been like eliminated because of that?
Oh, for sure. Because now I'm not worried about, I got to get my 6 meals in. Oh, I get my protein in. Oh, I got to get whatever. I'm going to lose weight if I don't do it. Shit, that hasn't done anything.
Yeah, so one of the things I noticed with intermittent fasting is when I'm fasted, I move better. I have less pain.
Yes.
Is it very?
Oh, 100%. Yes.
You too.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, I wonder why, you know, part of the reason I think is
it's keeping the inflammation down for sure. And if you're inflamed, I would think that would affect your range of motion and ability to move properly, wouldn't you? I mean,
I do. And I think food, eating in general is slightly inflammatory, right? Because things are moving and digesting. So just eliminating that.
Priorities into digestion and processing all that too, right?
But I do know that fasting does tend to stimulate a sympathetic response in the body. So it is a little amplifying with the CNS, but it doesn't seem to be amplifying in the wrong way. I guess maybe if I did it too long or something like
that. Yeah, because then your body's now going into crap. We are starving.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to break down the muscle that we've now built. And now, you know, we're going after, you know, parts of the body that we just don't use as much anymore. Mm-hmm. Let's go after that.
What, you know, you mentioned just for a second, and I'd like to revisit because I'm sure there's people that heard that and want to hear more. You were a part of the team that created Rock Tape and did that, right? Yeah. You were all part of that process. How did that start and evolve? What have you seen? You kind of touched on some of the drawbacks, which right away is what I notice is it became like one of those things where people learn like it has some benefits to it, and then average.
And they just put it all over their body.
The average CrossFitter is taping themselves, and I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, do you even know what you're really taping, or did you just see your buddy and it looks cool on their shoulder when they tape it, so you now tape it on your shoulder? And like, what do you know about that? I mean, explain
when
that.
Greg Vandendry is the one that started Rock Tape, and you know, then Steve Capobianco, he had gone to him, and he was a chiro out of Los Gatos at the time. And he's now since sold his practice and moved up into Colorado. So opened a mega facility in Littleton, you know, called Project Move. And I mean, Capo's amazing. And so he and I got together and started developing the educational, you know, component to it. And so, you know, the very first class that we taught was here in Los Gatos, and it was just to a bunch of our friends, you know. So, I mean, what we taught education-wise evolved every single time that we taught, you know. So where does tape, you know, how does tape affect the body? It's, again, it's a stimulant, right? So you put something on the skin, you feel that, right? I mean, with the skin being the largest,
feedback.
Yeah, it's the largest organ in the body, right? You're getting immediate feedback. So what we thought was, well, there's no really right way or wrong way to really tape someone. You know, how can we tape these guys into patterns that we are going to try and put them to move better?
Mm.
You know, and again, that's if you look at Tom Myers and his anatomy trains, we were getting to fascial taping, right? So now we're taping a whole fascial line starting at the base of the neck, going all the way down to the bottom of the foot. So now we are getting the entire posterior fascial line to become stimulated, which then does what? Stimulates the entire plantar fascia, your Achilles, your calf, your posterior part of your knee, your hamstring, your glutes, your low back, your mid back, your neck, all the way up and around if you wanted to. You know what? People have hair all the way around to their eyebrows. So that's actually where that posterior fascial line goes. Or again, is it an anterior or oblique sling? Or so what's fun about the tape is we can tape them in patterns and we can get them to move in those patterns, if you will. But what's it essentially doing is, again, it's the information, right? It's stimulating a certain, you know, information there that's now saying, okay, let's do something. What are we going to do with that? You know, how are we going to try and move differently, or how is this going to enhance your movement? You know, a lot of people want to do it as a pain control. Again, for me, I don't want it to become a crutch,
mm-hmm.
right? So we'll figure out why you keep having pain. You know, we're not going to get a cyclist to go from a six-hour cyclist to a four-hour cyclist, but we might be able to get that six-hour cyclist to ride longer with less back pain.
Mm.
Right.
It sounds, rock tape sounds like training wheels to me. It sounds like you put it on.
Yes.
This will help get the recruitment pattern that we want.
Well, it reminds
learn how to do it. And because I'm going to be honest with you, I'm guilty. And I think in some of our early episodes, we talk crap about some of these things because I don't think we understood.
Yeah.
Because I would see rock tape and I'd see people use it and I'd be like, well, that's how the fuck is that supporting you?
Yeah.
It's on your skin. Like, what is that doing? Same thing with the vibration plate. You know, how does the vibration plate help? And I've talked crap about it, but now that I understand more about how the CNS fires and you can get to relax and move or whatever, it starts to make more sense.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. No, yeah. It does. I look at it the same, just like my squat shoes. Like having the elevated heel allows me to get greater range and greater depth in my squat. But ultimately, I'm working towards not needing that whatsoever, right? So it's kind of the same concept, right? You're going to tape yourself. You're trying to help you create better patterning. But ultimately, you want to be able to do that without anything, right? I mean,
correct.
Isn't that the whole idea?
Yep.
So I think that's the takeaway from it is that it's not that does it work mm-hmm. or not work. Absolutely, it can work and absolutely it can help somebody. But to not just stop there.
Well, let's say it's a placebo effect. Do you
right.
care?
Right.
No.
Yeah, right.
No, if something works, it works.
Exactly. They don't care if it does or not, right? Yeah. It took my pain away. Done. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So your philosophy sounds very different. It sounds like when you get a client, your goal is to not have to ever see them again.
If I could get them better in one visit, perfect. Is that a great business model? No way. But again,
at least you recognize that.
You know, yeah. But I mean, we have a high turnover, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, I mean, it's like we're getting people out there. And for me, I don't do virtually any marketing whatsoever, right? So it's all word of mouth. And so for me, it's like getting in to see me is 2 and 3 weeks out, you know? And so, which is a good thing for me, but it's like, yeah, I'm working like crazy as well. But I think I've done that, you know, and saying, hey, I am different. And I'll preface that, you know, from people at the very beginning saying, we're going to be a little bit different if you've been to a chiro before, because I'm not going to sell you anything. I'm going to take you through this little movement analysis,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I'm watching you move from the moment they get up out of the chair to the moment they sit in my office to when they get out. Everything we work on, my mind's always changing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because again, I don't know what's going to be the best for them at that one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is the role of adjustments then? What is the role of taking someone and popping them? Is that, again, along the lines of central nervous system? Is that just another tool to tell the CNS to move or to fire a certain way? Or are you actually trying to manipulate the bone?
Well, you are getting things to move, right?
Okay.
You've got, 26 joints, you know, just in the spine, you know, so you're getting the spine to try and move. You're getting the hips to move. You're getting the knees to move. So, you know, those joints have to move, right?
Okay.
If they don't move, what are you going to do? The tissue is going to follow. So if the shoulder doesn't act like a shoulder, the tissue on the shoulder is going to get stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. What are you going to do? You can't move it anymore. Or same thing with your back, right? Again, we go back to desk jockeys, but what's probably their tightest areas? Their mid-back,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're hunched over. Well, what can they not do? They can go into flexion because they do that all day long, but they can't go into extension,
okay.
right? So yes, now we want to get those bones to move, but at the same time, we adjust them. let's teach you an exercise. Let's teach you a segmental cat camel. Let's teach you, you know, just lay on a foam roller and extend over it. I mean, you can't even do that, right? And how much can we progress and how much can we regress depends on, you know, what that person is dictating to us.
Wow.
I absolutely love your philosophy and approach to everything, because although you have all these tools and are either certified, experienced in, and knowledgeable about, but that's just it. You utilize them as a tool, and an ultimate goal is to really get a client out and away from you and able to do all these things on their own without any of these crutches. But yet you have them, and I love how you explain them. I think that's something that I know, like Sal brought up, we kind of were hard on Rock Tape back in the days, and I feel, or when we first started Mind Pump. But just like the training mask and some of these other tools that are out there, like something that I stand by that I think I've said many times on this show is that there's almost anything on the market that and I said almost, not everything, right? But almost anything that's on the market, especially if it's made it as big as Rock Tape or Elevation, there's some sort of science behind to support its benefits and whatever it's doing. But it's how you use it and understanding what you're using it for. And I think that's the thing that I think Mind Pump is always trying to preach and get out there as far as the information for people. So maybe Sal's stance on Rock Tape has slightly changed as far as it being a beneficial tool or not. But still, I think there's a ton of people out there that misuse it just like they misuse a ton of other tools that are out there. And I love listening to Brink explain the science behind it and where the place is for it.
Well, you know, it's funny also. So we talk about tape as a bad thing or a potential bad thing, right? When it's a good thing. And there's been studies that show that, hey, it does work. There's studies that show that it doesn't do crap. But same thing with a glute bridge, right? Let's get someone into a glute bridge, right? Let's get someone into a posterior pelvic tilt, right? So if we're going to glute bridge the hell out of someone, right? We're going to strengthen up that glute like crazy, right? Then, but can they stand on one leg? Nope.
Right.
Why they have the strongest ass there is, right? But now they can't use it when they walk because they don't know what that is, right? Because why? Because the foot's not talking to it, right? So the moment the foot hits that ground, everything is now shut off.
By the way, Justin has the strongest ass there is, just to clarify.
just want to put it out there.
Slam it on people.
That's his handle online if you ever want to find him in the
flying ass slammer. .com.
Well, I tell you what, man, it's great to have you on our team. We really appreciate you kind of consulting a little bit with us on our new program that we're about to release, Maps Yellow. And we look forward to working with you.
What's in the future? Do we have the actual date of his first class that will be in here? And do you have any openings for that? Is that sold out? The March one.
There are openings for that. Correct.
There are openings for that.
Yeah, do you know
that? I don't think we have the date.
So 11th, okay, we'll do March 11th and 12th, I think, is when it's a Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, well, we'll do an official commercial heading into this. So
it'll be held here at MAPS, Mind Pump Media Studios.
Yeah,
the future for sure of this relationship will be holding more classes like that where Brink, ourselves, will all be around. And I believe you'll be bringing some of your team around here because, Dr. Brink has people that are underneath him that are actually starting to spread this good word. And I'll make sure we do a commercial heading into this just so you guys know.
Have you heard the good word of Mind Pump?
We are all evangelists.
Yeah. But, handing out the Watchtower magazine.
Looking forward to it, man. And we got
don't come to my door on a bicycle.
I'm excited to bring you up to Reno and part of one of our trips, man, where we create, man. It's going to be awesome.
You have no idea.
Magic.
You have no idea what Adam's going to do.
You're going to walk right into magic. Pixie dust.
Hey, listen, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll get a free Mind Pump t-shirt. You can also find us on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. You can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam. And Justin is at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.